Microlanguage Lab, Learning the 6809, is a presentation of Green Mountain Micro.
What was I saying? Oh yes, interrupts. Let me take you back to Sam's Kitchen in Roadside, New Jersey, where you can honk for drive-up service from noon to six. Have another listen to Marge at work.
Give me one fries, two BLTs, three chili dogs. All right. And one onion rings. Get those ready. There's a guy out honking that thing like Little Richard. Yeah, what will you have?
Three burgers, two fries, a shake.
You want bunny burgers or bunny burgers?
One bunny burger, two buddy burgers.
One bunny, two bunnies, fries. Hey, where's my order? Anything else, Joe? How about you, Mac?
How about another dog, will you, Marge, with onions and cheese, too?
Cheese, dog, onions!
Order's up!
Hey, where's my steak? What about the chili dog? Damn! Gotta get that! Yeah, what do you want?
Give me three bunnies, Zenda.
Hey, fella, I'm busy. Sit on it till I get to you. Three bunnies, one else, and make it quick.
Sure, how about filet mignon, truffles and leeks, vinaigrette?
Remember that the restaurant is the computer and Marge is the microprocessor. The cook and customers are program and storage memory. The car horn was the interrupt. Marge finished what she was doing, serviced the interrupt, and returned to finish her previous task. When two interrupts occurred, car two had a higher priority. Finally, the drive-up interrupt was masked, except from noon to six. The 6809E processor has one power-up reset signal, three hardware and three software interrupts, plus two unique instructions to synchronize itself with hardware interrupts. All of these 6809 interrupts are possible on the color computer, and some are already in use by BASIC. The reset control is used when the power is turned on to the computer, or when the reset switch is pressed on the back of the machine. It is a separate electrical connection to the 6809 processor, and the reset cannot be masked by software. It is always accepted. The most important of the interrupts, that is, the interrupt of the highest priority, is the NMI, or non-maskable interrupt. It is also a separate electrical connection to the processor, and, like reset, it cannot be turned off by software. It always commands the attention of the processor. Of next highest priority is the fast interrupt request, or FIRQ. The FIRQ can be turned off in software by setting bit 6, the F bit, of the condition code register. Or CC immediate 40 can be used to set this bit, turning off the interrupt, and CC immediate BF can be used to clear bit 6 to turn on the interrupt. When the FIRQ comes along, the condition code register and program counter are put on the stack and the interrupt service routine is begun. The FIRQ is fast because it leaves the remainder of the register stacking up to the interrupt service routine. If a register is not used, it won't need to be put on the stack. I'll talk about requirements for speed later on. The interrupt with the lowest priority is simply called the interrupt request, or IRQ. When a zero appears on this electrical connection to the CPU, all the registers, what's known as the entire machine state, are saved on the stack. This interrupt is turned off in software by setting bit 4, the I bit of the condition codes, and turned on by clearing bit 4. Or CC immediate 10 turns it off, and CC immediate EF turns it on. Or CC immediate 50 turns off both interrupts, and conversely, and CC immediate AF turns on both interrupts. You'll remember that I described indirect addressing by explaining how the computer obtained its first instruction after the power was turned on. The processor went to addresses FFFE and FFFF, concatenated the contents, and used that as the address of its first instruction. There are, in fact, 7 such address pairs like this one, called vectors. Power on reset plus each of the 6 interrupts has its own vector from FFF2 to FFFF. Here's how the vectors are arranged in the color computer. The reset vector, as you know, is FFFE and FFFF. And on the color computer, that vector contains address A027, and that's the bootstrap routine. The NMI, non-maskable interrupt, is FFFC and FFFD, and that contains address 0109. The NMI is not used by basic or extended color basic. The software interrupt number 1 is FFFA and FFFB, and its contents are 0106. And again, there's nothing at 0106 in RAM because the software interrupt is not used by either of the 2 basics. The IRQ, is found at FFF8 and FFF9, and its address contents are 010C. And if you go to 010C in memory, you find that at that location is a jump to 894C. 894C is part of the extended color basic language. The FIRQ, the FIRQ, is found at FFF6 and FFF7. And its contents are 010F, and if you go down in memory to 010F, you find a jump to A0F6 in the color basic ROM. And finally, software interrupts 2 and 3 are at FFF4, FFF5, and FFF2, FFF3, and they also contain vectors to RAM 0103 and 0100, and neither of those are used by either of the basics. So they're all vectored into RAM at some place so that you can access them. 2 of them, the IRQ and the fast IRQ, are used by the basics, and the reset is used to start up the system. The other interrupts, the 3 software and the NMI, are not used by basic. So here we go with a summary of all of that information. The power-up reset goes right to address A027, a location in color basic which establishes all the important parameters of the language. NMI is not used by color basic or extended color basic, but 3 unfilled bytes in low RAM are reserved for future use. The future use is provided because the NMI is wired to connection number 4 on your computer's cartridge slot. Software interrupts SWI1, SWI2, and SWI3 are also left undefined with 3 unfilled bytes at their vector locations. They are used by debugging programs such as ZBug, part of your EdTASM Plus cartridges. Yes, we'll talk about debugging next time and the time after that. So, on to the other interrupts. FIRQ, FIRQ, the fast interrupt, is hooked to one of the peripheral interface adapters, connecting to both the PIA's interrupt output lines. The input to the PIA's interrupt control signals are 2. The carrier detection, CD line, on your RS-232 communications interface, which is also your printer connector, and to the cartridge in place, CART connection, number 8 on your computer's cartridge connector. The fast interrupt request serves dual purpose. When FIRQ occurs, the vector concatenated from addresses FFF6 and FFF7 point to address 010F, and at address 010F is the instruction jump to A0F6, a location in the color basic ROM. The slower interrupt, IRQ, is connected to the second peripheral interface adapter, also to both of its interrupt outputs. The interrupt control inputs of this PIA are connected to the horizontal synchronization, HS, and field or vertical synchronization, FS, outputs of the video display generator. Again, this interrupt serves a dual purpose. When IRQ takes place, the address and vectors FFF8 and FFF9 are concatenated to produce address 010C. At 010C is found the instruction jump 894C, an address in the extended color basic ROM. In all these cases, the address in low RAM can be changed or filled in, redirecting the interrupts to any location in memory. You will be using those addresses. Now, I've given you a formal and rather wordy description of the vectors in the hookup. and I expect it doesn't mean a whole lot to you at this point. I'm going to continue with a detailed description of how everything fits together into a neat package, but first I want you to read the technical and theoretical information. Read the MC6809 data booklet on page 9, about the interrupts, and the MC6821 data booklet on page 7, the peripheral interface lines, and page 8, the internal controls, and figure 18 on page 10. Read the MC6847 data booklet on page 13, which talks about field and horizontal synchronization. And if you do have the Color Computer Technical Reference Manual, read section 3 called Theory of Operation. That's a lot to read. Take care of that now and come back to the tape when you're done.
Read the MC6809E data booklet, page 9. NMI, FIRQ, IRQ. Read the MC6821 data booklet, page 7, peripheral interface lines, and page 8, internal controls, and figure 18, page 10. Read the MC6847 data booklet, page 13, field sync and horizontal sync. If you have the Color Computer Technical Reference Manual, read section 3, Theory of Operation. Return to the tape when you have completed the reading. Turn the tape off now.
Now putting it together. By correctly writing data to the PIAs, you can make it possible for the computer to detect an RS-232 carrier, to detect the presence of a plug-in cartridge, or to synchronize your programs to the video display, either horizontally or vertically. All you need to add is the software. I've got two demonstrations of this. The first is a continuous, on-screen, software-controlled clock. The second, in the next lesson, an example of synchronizing the video display with programming changes to the screen. The clock first. I'm going to put a clock in the upper right corner of the video screen. It will be there no matter what else is displayed on the screen, whether you're listing, entering or editing a line, or running a basic program. It will even keep running with certain machine language programs that don't turn off interrupts or change the vectors. I think I'll make it count in tenths of a second so you can really see some action, and count up to 99 hours, 59 minutes, 59.9 seconds. Well, you've read the data booklets, so maybe you're ahead of me. Remember the video display generator's field sync, FS signal, which is used for interrupting the processor. The video display generator's field sync signal occurs at precisely 60 times each second. By enabling the interrupt, which is bit 0 of port address FF03, I can get an interrupt to occur 60 times each second. If I keep track of those interrupt ticks and update my screen with a new time every 6 interrupts, then I've got a tenth of a second clock. The interrupt occurs 60 times a second. I update the screen with a new time every 6 interrupts, which means I update the screen every tenth of a second. From a tenth of a second clock, with simple divisions, I can create a full real-time software clock. Here's the structure of the setup and interrupt service routine. You might want to follow along in the book with this one. First, you set aside some memory for the clock. It might be an image of the actual display, such as 1259.02.2, or something like that. Then you enable the 60 per second interrupt. Then a complicated test pattern follows. On an interrupt, increment the 60th of a second counter, which you've got stored. If the 60th of a second counter passes 5, then you increment the 10th of a second counter and clear the 60th of a second counter to 0. Okay, if the 10th of a second counter passes 9, you increment the 1 second counter and clear the 10th of a second counter to 0. If the 1 second counter passes 9, you increment the 10 second counter and clear the 1 second counter to 0. If the 10 second counter passes 5, remember 59 seconds, increment the 1 minute counter and clear the 10 second counter to 0. If the 1 minute counter passes 9, increment the 10 minute counter and clear the 1 minute counter to 0. If the 10-minute counter passes 5, increment the 1-hour counter and clear the 10-minute counter to 0. If the 1-hour counter passes 9, increment the 10-hour counter and clear the 1 hour counter to zero. And finally, if the 10 hour counter passes 9, we're going to go up to 99 hours here, clear it to zero. And you would display the new time to the screen. The redisplay will take place every 60th of a second, appearing as a continuous display. Then you would clear the interrupt status at port FFO2, more on that later, more on the interrupt status latch. Then, finally, return from the interrupt. The setup process has to clear the way for the interrupts without getting interrupted in the middle of things, so all interrupts go off right at the start. The address of your own routine is placed into the RAM vector. The proper interrupt signal, in this case the 60 per second FS signal, is enabled. When all that's done, interrupts are re-enabled and the setup routine returns to basic. Everything set up then and ready to go. Earlier in this book, I presented a map of the computer's input-output port bits. Bit 0 of control port FF03 provides that the FS signal be latched as an interrupt. So the whole routine might look like this. OR CC immediate 50, that turns off the interrupts. Then load X immediate with start, which is wherever your interrupt service routine actually starts. Store X at 010D. So you're going to store the starting address after the command jump in the vector for that interrupt. Then load A accumulator immediate with 37, and that's a value to enable the field sync 60 per second signal to come through. A little bit more on that I'll talk about. Then store that A accumulator at FF03, which enables the field sync through the interrupt. Then AND CC immediate EF, and that re-enables the IRQ interrupt in the condition code register. And then last of all, RTS goes back to basic. That's the setup. The interrupt service routine itself is quite simple also. Get the whole thing loaded into EDTASM Plus, and then come back for a walkthrough.
Find program number 34 in the book and follow the instructions. This is an EDTASM Plus program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. You should have loaded an EDTASM Plus program. Display this program using the P command and compare it to program number 34. If it appears correct, please continue with this tape. Otherwise, rewind to the program listing and try again.
The opening is the 16-byte setup routine, turning off interrupts, redirecting the interrupt vector to my interrupt service routine, passing through the 60 per second interrupt, turning on interrupts, and returning to basic. The service routine itself is a strung out series of increments and comparisons. The 60th of a second clock image in memory is incremented and tested for 36. That's the ASCII value for the character 6. If it's less than a 6, out it goes, otherwise it begins a down the line test. Notice in the labels DEC1 and DEC2 routines the use of an indexed pre-decrement command. Right along you've been seeing the post-increment command, such as load A, X plus, but up to this time pre-decrement hasn't turned up. Since this routine is bumping backwards in memory from 60th of a second up to tens of hours, a decrement is needed. Check the sequence in the subroutine. Store B indexed by X. Then comes the command inc increment comma minus x, and the sequence is decrement x first, then increment its contents. And then finally, load A accumulator indexed by x. The value in B, an ASCII 0, is stored in memory pointed to by x. The x pointer is decremented, and then its contents are incremented. Two things of complementary character are found here. The pointer is first decremented, then its contents are incremented. And finally, the A accumulator is loaded with the contents of the memory location now pointed to by x. You're going to want to look in the book and examine this routine closely. It's very simple, but it's something new you haven't seen before. After all the increments, tests, and updates are complete, the memory image of the time in ASCII is transferred to the screen. In line 490, Y points to location 0416 on the screen, and the X register points to the updated clock. A short loop transfers the information from the image to the screen. Finally, the command LDA FF02 extended resets the latched interrupt from the PIA. In your reading of the MC6821 data booklet, page 8, this was mentioned. I'll read that paragraph. Quote, the four interrupt flag bits are set by active transitions of signals on the four interrupt and peripheral control lines when those lines are programmed to be inputs. These bits cannot be directly set from the MPU data bus and are reset indirectly by a read peripheral data operation on the appropriate section. In other words, flags go up inside the PIA when the interrupt takes place. By reading from the PIA, the flag goes down. LDA extended FF02 reads from the PIA and turns off the interrupt flag. The last instruction in the program, jump 894C, might not make immediate sense. You probably expected a return from interrupt instruction, RTI. Let me explain this. You'll recall that the interrupt vector for IRQ goes to address 010C in low RAM for its instruction. At that location is found the instruction jump 894C. In order for this time display program to work properly with BASIC, it must then chain itself to BASIC's vectors. The vector and the subsequent jump 894C controls the cursor flashing and timer, among other things, so it's got to be there. By replacing jump 894C with the jump 3F10 that gets the time display routine going that we just wrote, the program has intercepted an absolutely vital part of BASIC's operating system. So to keep the link from IRQ vector 010C to ROM location 894C. This program intercepts 010C, patches itself in place, and finishes by jumping to 894C. The chain is complete, the time is displayed, and BASIC has its cursor and timer. BASIC finishes by executing itself the return from interrupt RTI. Well, I think it seems simple enough. Give it a try. Assemble this program in memory at the correct origin. Type A/IM/AO and hit Enter. The program will assemble into memory, A/IM/AO. When it's finished and the cursor has returned, type and enter Q. You'll quit EdTESM Plus and return to BASIC. Protect memory now. This program resides from 3F00 to 3F77, so protect from 3F00 on up. Type and enter clear 200, comma, ampersand H3F00. That's clear 200, comma, ampersand H3F00. Well, are you ready for this clock? Type and enter exec ampersand H3F00. That's exec EXEC ampersand H3F00. And there's the clock ticking away in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. You can enter, edit, and list and run BASIC programs. Try a few short programs and see how it looks to have the clock in the corner constantly. When you're done with that, try one more test. Create any basic program and C-save it to tape. Well, I don't care what kind of program it is, and you don't really even have to save it to the tape itself, even keep the tape recorder running. I just want you to use the C-save command, C-save something, and keep an eye on the screen. Before the next session, figure out what you see and why it has to happen that way. Have fun with it. Till next time.